In the Fale is a music show on ABC Radio Australia, hosted by me, Paola Tukefu. I'll be spinning my favorite tunes from dancehall to disco, calypso to country, reggae to roots, and hip-hop to house music, from across the eras to keep the kids and the aunties happy. If it has a pumping groove, I'll be bringing it to you to bump you into the weekend.
Search up In the Fale to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Resorts, homes, and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream. You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Mbulo Binaka, I'm Josiah Nanunga, based in Fiji.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia.
And this is Pacific Prepared. This show aims to interweave traditional knowledge and climate change, helping you to be ready for any disaster.
Through stories and Talanoa from the Pacifica.
On today's show, we will hear a story about a fisherman and how he prepares for any disaster. As he says, that storm warnings carry different meanings.
And we'll take a look back at some of the stories from Pacific Prepared that really made an impact on us in 2025.
That's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
The time to prepare is now, not right before an emergency.
No electricity, nothing whatsoever.
You are listening to Pacific Prepared.
When someone or when you look at the ocean, you might see waves, white caps, the water moving around like a washing machine. Looks pretty random and natural, but when some people look at the ocean, they see something different. It's a bit like a book for them.
For people who live on boats and fish for a living, looking at the ocean is totally different. They can read the conditions, they know without actually knowing, and that could be called traditional knowledge.
For years, a local Fijian fisherman has been reading the ocean patterns. But it's not always the same story. Climate change is making it tricky for him. So we wanted to find out how he has adapted. How does he keep up with the changing weather? Well, at the moment, it's a bit calm, and we always believe that that statement or the saying that goes, a calm before a storm, and so we trust our instinct, and that what he just stated a while ago, and his instinct is to take this boat at this particular safe spot before it's too late. So now we're actually moving.
Mbulo Binaka. My name is Abinay Naulango, and I am from Nawamangi village, upriver. And I've been in this industry for about 12 years now. And it's been my source of income for the past 12 years, and this is all I do, just fish. Mostly, the main, my main source of information about the weather at the moment is on the website, mobile phones. WindGuru is an app I used, and windy.com. They're very reliable. I use both of them because sometimes They give different information, so I use the other app to check about the weather.
Can you just talk about the level of preparedness? How well do you prepare yourself and other fisher folks in terms of when there is an impending tropical cyclone, for example, or even tropical disturbance?
Preparation is a must. We prepare ourselves very well. We first of all, we check the weather updates 2-3 days before. They normally give you a week, but we check every day just to get an update every day about the swells, the wind directions, and what to expect when we're out there at sea. The boat, before we leave, I check everything. We always have fuel, make sure we have enough fuel to get back home, and anchors are all secured, ropes, life jackets, flares, and all the necessary stuff to make a good trip.
So the light you use is usually a torch at night?
I have lights, I have ports and starboard light on, but it's not on at the moment. Only when the sea is busy, then you need both your lights on, so the other boats can see you and know your position. They can figure out their position too as well, yeah.
Well, we are actually moving. So this is a spot right at the Singatoka River mouth. And the Singatoka River mouth is... Singatoka River is the longest river in Fiji. So this is right at the mouth that that connects to the open sea. That's where he's based. And we will now travel across to Korotongo Village, which might take how many minutes from here to Korotongo?
10-15 minutes from here to Korotongo.
What would have been some of the worst experiences that you've encountered recently, for example, during your night or day out at sea?
12 years is a long time, and I have encountered some terrible weather out at sea. I have experienced the rough seas, strong winds. It's scary. It's not easy. It's a lot of courage and guts to be out there during those rough times. Yeah.
And most importantly, how the need to handle the situation or to be steady enough in order to be mentally, physically ready to counter those challenges. That's very important. And that is key for any mariner across the country in Fiji and right across the Pacific, as this is an area or one of an avenue that sustain our livelihood on a daily basis. So now it's a bit calm, and what's your take on the current weather that we're experiencing right now?
Oh, this is fisherman's dream. It's calm. I think it's a calm before the storm, but yeah, there's no wind, no swell at the moment, small swells.
No! Huh? Slide the clamp by there.
So it's exactly an estimated 13 to 14 minutes that took us from the Singotoka River mouth to this village in Korotongo, the safe spot to evacuate this outboard fiber engine boat. How long will it take, roughly, for the boat to be stationed here?
As long as the weather.
Once the bad weather passes, then
we bring the boats out again.
Is it safe here, and why do you choose this spot?
It is safe because it's inside a bay, and it's the water is calm in here, and most fishermen do the same. They take their boat in the bay and anchor their boat there.
As we are in to another cyclone season from November to April the next year, what would be a few of your advices to mariners or other fishermen, fisherwomen out there?
Yeah, my advice is just be alert all the time. Check your weather updates all the time because it makes a difference. It really makes a difference. And just be careful out there. Be steady. Don't panic. Just take it easy. Breathe. That's the most important thing. Panic. Panic is what causes chaos out at sea. That's the last thing. Don't panic. And just be steady. Trust your instinct. And trust in yourself. Believe in yourself. That's all I can say.
Right. So the engine now is slowing down, and so that is a very interesting and important pieces of information that we must all learn and take it off, not only for you mariners who are listening in right now, but for us in the Pacific as we engage heavily in fisheries related activities. And that was Mr. Avenay Nolango, one of the fisher folks here in the province of Nandronga, Nabosa. Mr. Nolango, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Vinaka. Thank you very much.
We need to be prepared for the future.
Helping you stay safe.
We have built a seawall 2 times, but it did no good.
What happens when something goes wrong, and how do they respond to it?
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
It might sound obvious, but this radio program, Pacific Prepared, is all about helping, informing people to be prepared for disasters.
And as we always say, the way that we do that is from hearing stories from you, the listener, the communities who are preparing for and living through these disasters.
Absolutely, Fred. And this year we've heard, we've collected, we've gathered different kinds of talanoa, different kinds of stories from reporters right across the Pacific. Stories that put a real person and a real voice to the things that we are always talking about right here on Pacific Prepared.
Stories like from a small village on the coast in Tonga, after walking down some dusty roads, surrounded on each side with water, to find a man in his home who was physically unable to move, and all he was worried about was his family.
Okay. O kuingoa ko siene matare mau, ko nofi popua,
He said his name is Mataele Mau, and he's from Papua, and he's one of the people with disability. But before that, she can do construction workers and working and staff, and especially help out with his family. But now he can't due to his disability.
What have been your experiences with natural disasters living here in Papua?
Yeah, me ago oko ausia raki nei ilonga he hokon ko e puna mungafi. Puna mungafi na watonga na u fika ko family ke na.
He said his experience from previous natural disasters is they are struggling with when it comes to evacuation, because the recent tsunami warning and also the previous, especially the devastation in 2022, he felt like he's not fully commit or conducted his responsibility as a father to his family. And from the recent natural disaster, tsunami warning, he told his family to evacuate, just left him, just leave him to die. She can help himself. So he wants his family to evacuate as soon as possible to save their lives. And also...
But he was happy to stay behind.
Happy. He cared for his family's safety first because of his situation. And the other issue is that they are trying to seek assistance from the government, because when it comes to evacuate... they don't have any special attention or special care from the government or other organizations to help them in when they needed the help most, especially during the any emergency or natural disasters. But they have their own committee because here in Papua, because they have. Torunua got disability or Fidnoa, Fidualu. They have 78 people with disabilities here in Papua only. So they form their own committee to work together what they can do, what to address the issue they are facing here at Papua, especially living in our vulnerable areas. And they are trying to plan what needed to be done during especially when a tsunami warning occurred.
Oh, the story from a place of huge rectangle stones, and I mean massive, huge. Each stone was about the size of a car, imagine that. But they were like properly stacked as high as a coconut tree. And this place was called Nan Madol in the Federated States of Micronesia, or FSM.
We do have experts, anthropologists, archaeologists. A lot of studies have been done. Maybe it's not well published. And in a way, we want to keep it that way. People ask me, how were the islands? We have oral histories, we have our own oral history of how the islands were built, And that's the million-dollar question, And that's what's going to bring the crowd in, the people to come and visit, You come, we try to explain what we know about it, that we learned from oral history, and then you go and you formulate your own theories about it. To me, it was a maritime center at one time. That's the way I look at it. That's why it was built on the ocean. So the canoes are readily accessible. This is where, I imagine, in the region, not only in Micronesia, but in the region, they were sailing. This is where they came and worshipped. They proficient, and then they continued on their journey. Thank you, Casalilia. That's greetings, Ponpen. My name is Augustine Kohler. Currently, I'm the director of the FSM Office of National Archives, Culture, and Historic Preservation. So we're at the national level. So basically, most of our work is historic preservation, conservation, and other stuff that we do. So basically, we provide assistance to the states. As you know, the FSM is comprised of four islands: Pohnpei State, where the capital is, Kosrae, Yap, and Chuuk. So we're basically, we, on behalf of the state's APOs, you know, we write grants. We seek funding and technical assistance to assist in our efforts, our conservation preservation efforts.
So what was the process that did the team followed to ensure that it got declared?
I'm glad you asked that.
You're laughing about that one. It was a bit of a process, was it?
It was a lot of work, let me tell you. It took about 5 years of my own work, you know, to make it happen. But you had to get a lot of the stakeholders involved. So it was a national government, state government, local government, including, which is more important, the traditional leadership of Apunpi. You know, for your information, a lot of things are not implemented or cannot be implemented without the blessings of the, we call them the Namarkis, but these are the traditional chiefs. So we have 5 municipalities in Apunpi, each of them has a traditional chief.
Director, looking to the future, now in the Pacific, the impacts of climate change, rising sea levels, and since Narmadol is next to the ocean or sea, the risk is eventually there.
Yes.
Since the site has been declared under World Heritage Sites, one of the UNESCO World Heritage Sites here in FSM, how do you ensure that the authenticity of the area is maintained when we look at from the perspective of the impacts of climate change and rising sea levels?
Our capacity is very limited. So we do, since we're part of UNESCO, we do reach out to them, and they do get experts out here to assist us, you know, in planning, in mitigating, you know, with climate change. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, we just want to let nature take its course. There are more than 100 islets, man-made islets. You probably only saw one, Nantawas, you know, but there's in the mangroves. So, and we realize that we cannot develop all of them for the people to see. So we're going to pick maybe 5 or 4 islets and dedicate that to tourism. And then the rest, we just let nature take its course.
And there's other stories of different types of being prepared, like food, something that we all need. And this year, we were standing in a field with some pigs and a farmer holding a large knife, maybe the size of his forearm or roughly about that size. And he's bending over, slashing away at his crop, which is sometimes known as the potato of the Pacific.
This is how you cut the plant.
So right now Jack is cleaning the lower part of the cassava plant or cassava branch.
Naka. My name is Jack Alex Manwaui. I'm from Naumangi village. Naumangi village is located about 7 kilometers from Singatoka town. It's in the salad bowl of Fiji, meaning that it's fit almost every market in the country and overseas in the village. We heavily engage in farming cassava to generate income, and mainly for our own use, we eat cassava almost every meal. Like we had breakfast, lunch, and dinner also. And that cassava is like our potato in Fiji.
Right. And right now, myself and Jack are walking in between the lines of already planted cassava. And as you can hear, we have a pig pen right next to the cassava patches. They're currently enjoying their coconuts. It's like lunchtime for them. Can you hear that sound? Yes, that's a pig pen next to these cassava patches. And Jack, what are some of the, you know, the process involved in planting cassava?
Planting cassava, we have to follow the process of the land. Like we have to, it's all our land here in Naumangi, it's all good land. It's anything you put in the soil, it will grow. And that's how it's good the soil is. Within the beginning of doing the process for planting the cassava, we have to plow.
Right. Now can you show us how to, pull out a cassava from the soil. What's first?
This is how we pull a cassava. You have to have a knife, a big knife, and then you come to the cassava plant. You cut all the plants.
Right.
This is how you cut the plant. You collect all the plants and put it away so you can clear the field you're planting the tapioca.
So right now Jack is cleaning the lower part of the cassava plant or cassava branch. So it's now time to pull it out?
Yes, it's time pulling out.
Right. It takes a lot of energy and strength to actually pull out this cassava. Looks good. So after you pull out the cassava, you identify that it's in a good size, so mature enough.
Yep.
Then what comes next? You chop it up?
I chop it up. And it depends for me.
Right.
I will take it home or I will take it to the market for any need in the market.
Right.
We never forget this where we come alive, the soil of planting, father, grandfather, and that's how they teach us to do what they're doing, because they knowing it's good for us.
And that was Jack, one of the farmers here in Naumang village, Singatoka, the province of Nandrunga. Jack, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
The time to prepare is now, not right before an emergency.
No electricity, nothing whatsoever.
You are listening to Pacific Prepared.
Wrapping up Pacific Prepared this week, Fred, and I think we're also wrapping up for the year.
Yeah, we are indeed, yeah. Thanks for listening to another and the final episode of Pacific Prepared for 2025. Not the final episode, but thanks for listening again this year, though. We really appreciate your support.
So, yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show this year again, Fred, Pacific Prepared. I always love coming in every week and just talk about some of the real life stories of the people who are grappling with the impacts of climate change, those who are disaster ready at all times. Fred?
Yeah, well, we love having your views on the show, Joe. It's very, very, really valuable to us. And we obviously couldn't make the show without you, so thank you so much.
Vinaka. So I'll talk to you next time.
Vinaka, thanks, Joe.
Pacific Prepared.
This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. Also the people of the Vanua Uviti. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. My name's Fred Hooper, and thanks to my co-host in Fiji, Josina Nunga. Please share any information you've learned today, and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.